ओम विष्णु पदाय कृष्ण पृष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमती भक्ति वेदांत स्वामिनीति नामिने नमस्ते सारस्वती देवी गौरवाणी प्रचारिणी निर्विशेष. Who will translate? Do I have a translator? Everyone understands English. Okay.
We have got the translation now.
Oh, okay. I would like to request that all the people in these balcony boxes sit correctly because you are in Krishna's temple. Right? You should all sit up straight. I see this girl here with the white blouse has her back to Krishna. Please turn around. Your back is to Krishna. Okay. Yes. You are in Krishna's house. If you don't take the right attitude, then you cannot understand Krishna consciousness. I was just thinking about this yesterday, I think. There's an English expression, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Does everybody know what that means? Right. To see the beauty depends on the attitude of the person looking at it. Right. So even materialists know this. To see the beauty of something requires that you look at it with the right attitude. And also in Krishna consciousness. Like we must bow down and be respectful. If we don't have that attitude, the spiritual master cannot give us knowledge because we cannot perceive it. Because whatever we perceive must go through the mind. And if the mind is not set right, then we cannot perceive right. Right. Okay. Om Jnanati Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshura Militanyena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Jai Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamaniti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pachari Nirvishesa Sanivadi Pashtati Adi Santari. So what is the topic for the class today? Any specific verse? Prabhupada pastimes. All right. Everybody want to hear about Prabhupada pastimes? All right. I first saw Srila Prabhupada in 1965. I had a job at the time, and I was interested in spiritual things, but I wasn't really ready to make too many sacrifices for it, you know, but like many young people at that time. Yeah. And I had a co-worker who was a student of Dr. Mishra. I think if you have read Prabhupada Lilamrita, you've heard of Dr. Mishra. So this gentleman, his name was Sil, he told me that he was a student of a wonderful yogi. He said, this yogi knew my wife was pregnant even before she did. You know, she had all kinds of powers. So out of curiosity, I went with a friend George to see the wonderful yogi. And when I walked in, it was a rented hall in Manhattan. I walked in, and, you know, there were folding chairs were set up. And at the far end, there was an Indian gentleman, elderly gentleman, wearing saffron robes. And I thought, oh, this must be the great yogi. Well, I was right, but it wasn't Sil's teacher. And Dr. Mishra came in, and he gave a lecture, and it was, you know, like 100 yoga lectures you've ever heard, you know, like every other yoga. So I didn't think any more of it. I went to see Dr. Mishra once more, and I wasn't too interested. Earlier in San Francisco, I had visited a Zen master, and he was a very impressive person. But I thought, he's not for me. And then one day I had a friend named Howard, who used to be Hayagriva, and my friend Keith, who is now Kirtanananda. And I was talking with Keith when Howard came in the room and said, I just saw this man on the street and he was wearing robes. And I said, are you from India? And he said, yes, and he's going to be giving classes on Second Avenue. And I said, oh, another guru. Yeah. And then I saw the Krishna place on Second Avenue. And it said something about Bhagavad Gita. And I thought, oh, Bhagavad Gita. I read that book. I didn't like it at all. Because I'd bought some translation in a bookstore. You know, and I couldn't understand anything. I couldn't make head or tail out of it. Only one thing was clear. Krishna is not God. And then one day I was riding in the car with my friend George, the one I had gone up to see Dr. Mishra with, and I saw the old man from India again. And he was with a young man who had a beard. And George poked me and said, hey, remember him? You know? And I didn't think any more about it. One evening I was walking down Second Avenue, and I heard this music. Ching, 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 ching. And I thought, wow, what is that music? That sounds so good. I said, I'm going to follow it and see what it is. So I followed it, and I came to the Krishna place. And there was a Swami from India sitting on the floor with a few young men, and they were chanting a mantra. And I had heard that chanting mantras was the best way to achieve enlightenment. And I thought, well, maybe this is what I'm looking for. And the door was open, so I started to walk in, but then Prabhupada was chanting like this. So I thought, oh, he doesn't want me to come in. But then I could see that he was simply keeping time with the music. So I found out later Prabhupada always kept the door open so people could walk in. Right? And I sat down and I tried to chant with them. I knew the word Krishna because my friend Keith had once told me that Krishna was painted blue because he would meditate in the snow. Right. So I knew that there was a great yogi named Krishna. You know, I went in and I did my best to chant with them. There was no sign, so I didn't know it was Hari Rama or Hari Lama, but I did my best. And then Prabhupada spoke and he gave a lecture. And during the lecture he said, the Supreme Absolute Truth is a person. And I thought that was the most intelligent thing I had ever heard in my whole life. I was astounded to hear that. So I thought, well, this is not some ordinary guru or Zen master. This is something special. So I thought, maybe I have found my teacher. So I started coming regularly. Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday night, there was kirtan, lecture, and kirtan. And Prabhupada would keep an apple beside him. And at the end of the program, he would cut the apple into slices and everybody would get a piece. So there was distribution of prasad. So I came regularly. Also went in the morning at 6:30 in Prabhupada's apartment, and we had to chant very softly because we're so early in the morning. And at that time, I was staying in the Mott Street apartment. You might have read about that. And then Kirtananda, then Keith, he made a schedule, 5:30 a.m., rise, shower, meditate. 6 o'clock a.m., drink tea, meditate. So I started going, but then I had a doubt. I thought, I can see that the Swami is very honest. He's not here to cheat. But how do I know he really has the truth? Because he could be very honest and also be misled. So what was the guarantee? You know, I didn't want a false teacher. And I hadn't started speaking to Prabhupada yet. But I went to hear him lecture, and during the lecture he said, I teach only what is in Scripture. So then I thought, if he teaches only what is in Scripture, then this is safe. There's no danger here. I can't be misled. So that way I started coming all the time. Okay, so Prabhupada, at that time we didn't have Bhagavad Gita as it is. And we would read from Bhagavad Gita with translation and commentary by Swami Nikalananda, who was in the disciplic succession from Ramakrishna, the Bengali Ramakrishna. I think this is the yogi that once asked Hayagriva, how is it possible to stop smoking? And then there was a Bhagavad Gita by Dr. Radhakrishnan, the former president of India, translation and commentary. And of course, like many others, I thought, and most of us thought, that bhakti is kind of yoga for children. You know, if you cannot grasp the nameless and formless, shapeless truth, then you can do bhakti, right? It's, you know, for those who weren't really at the top level. So Prabhupada would always criticize the impersonalists when he gave class. He would always, always. He'd never stop the Mayavadis, the impersonalists, the Buddhists, you know. And we couldn't understand why. You know, why isn't the Swami more liberal? You know? And then one day he said, today I will show you that Dr. Radhakrishnan is an impersonalist. And he had maybe it was Ray Rama by then. He had him read Manmana Bhava Mad Bhakto, you know, always think of me, become my devotee. He said, now read the commentary. And the commentary said, it is not to Krishna that we should surrender, but to the unborn eternal within Krishna. And he said, you see, that proves that he is an impersonalist. And I thought, well, what does it prove? You know, that sounds right. It's not to Krishna, to the unborn within Krishna. Right? And we all sat there very puzzled. And then Kirtanananda spoke. I have his permission to tell the story. It is not to criticize him, but he was the one who spoke. And he said, well, Dr. Radhakrishnan is right. You know, it's the unborn eternal within Krishna. And he spoke, and he went on and on and on. And as he spoke, I saw Prabhupada's face turning red. But red, I had never seen anybody's face turn so red, you know. I was thinking, now I know what it means when they say somebody turned red. I have never before or since seen anybody's face turn so red, you know. Then Kirtanananda stopped, and Prabhupada said, are you finished? And he said, no. And he went on again. Then he stopped, and he said, Prabhupada said, are you finished? And he said, yes. And Prabhupada said, do you understand what we've been talking about, that Krishna is the absolute truth? And he said, yes. And Prabhupada stood up and slammed his hand down on the table and said, then why do you want to take it away from Krishna? It's Krishna, it's Krishna. It's no unborn within Krishna, it's Krishna, it's Krishna. And I thought, wow, he's roaring like a lion. I thought, he looks just like a lion, you know. I had never seen so much power. But then we understood. You know, it's not the unborn within Krishna, it's Krishna. Kirtanananda was only saying what we all were thinking. You know. Then every morning we would have morning class. And 7 o'clock, he moved it down to the storefront. And at 7 o'clock, at 6:30 was so early. So we had 7 o'clock. And then we came to chapter 6, verse 47. Yoginam apisargrisham. Of all yogis, one who worships me with great faith is the highest of all. And Prabhupada said, you see, it says in Bhagavad Gita that the devotee of Krishna is the highest yogi. And it did. It did say that. You know, the Bhagavad Gita said that Krishna's devotee is the highest yogi. So I had no more thoughts of bhakti yoga being something lesser, because it said in Bhagavad Gita, and that was the authority. Can we shut off our cell phones, please? Thank you. Can we shut off the cell phone, please? Can everybody shut off his cell phone? Oh, yeah. Hey, shut off. Nigwanwa, the shoji. I'll be very embarrassed if my cell phone rings now. Or any pastimes that you've read about that you might want to ask me about while I'm trying to think of more pastimes. Is it okay to talk about Ramakrishna here? Do we have any Bengalis who will get angry with me? Because when I told the story in New Orleans, a Bengali got very angry and stormed out of the room. And said, you didn't understand what Prabhupada was saying. And I said, Prabhupada was talking to me when he said it. All right, one of the people Prabhupada would criticize was Ramakrishna. Does everybody know who Ramakrishna is? He was a Kali worshiper in Bengal at the beginning of the 20th century, right? Yeah, he was a devotee of the goddess Kali. But he was very popular among the hippies. The hippies liked him, you know. And Prabhupada would sometimes say things about Ramakrishna. And Hayagriva and I didn't like that because he had been one of our favorites, you know. So we got angry and we said, let's not go anymore. So we didn't go to the temple. It couldn't have been very long. And we were talking about this at the Matsya department. And Kirtananda came in, you know, and he says, why aren't you going to the temple? Because he was already living in the temple. He said, I've decided to leave the Swami. I don't like what's going on. And I said, well, that's just what we were talking about. And he said, you fool, do you think I would ever leave the Swami? You know, so we had been tricked. So he insisted that... This is Kirtan not doing the right thing, right? Saving us. So he insisted that we go see the Swami. So we went to see him, and Prabhupada said, well, is there some problem? You should not think you can talk about, you cannot talk about this with me. And I said, I gathered up all my courage, because Prabhupada was so powerful, you know. He was such, you're such a powerful person. And I said, well, we don't like these things you're saying about the Buddhists and Sri Ramakrishna. And Prabhupada said, well, as far as the Buddhists go, he said, I have never criticized Lord Buddha. I always call him Lord Buddha. He said, but the Buddhists all eat meat. And actually, too, in China, there's a saying, Zhou Rou Chuan Chang Guo Fu Zhu Xin Zhong Liu. Everybody laughs, but I haven't even told you what it means. And it means that the meat and wine go through your body, but the Buddha stays in your heart. And he said, and they don't believe in the soul. He said, you cannot show me anywhere in Buddhist literature where they believe in the soul. He said, they're all atheists. And as far as Ramakrishna goes, I have always said, and I will always say, he was nothing but a crazy priest. That was a line that infuriated the Bengali in New Orleans. You know, he said, you didn't know what Prabhupada meant, and I said, he was talking to me. And actually, I later found out that in Bengal, he's known as Pagal Baba, which means crazy priest. Right? He said, the followers of Ramakrishna all eat meat. He said they get a note from the doctor saying that they'll die if they don't eat meat. He said they are not respected by the holy men in India. And then he told me about some gathering, maybe it was a Kumbh Mela, I didn't know, some gathering, and somebody saw a dead fish floating on the water, and somebody else was saying, quick, call the Ramakrishna Mission. And everybody was laughing. And he said Ramakrishna was a Kali worshiper. And in Bhagavad Gita, it says that one who worships a demigod has no intelligence. He said, Ramakrishna said that if you worship Kali or you worship Krishna, you get the same result. But Bhagavad Gita said the result is not the same, so he contradicted Bhagavad Gita. And then he said, when Vivekananda met Ramakrishna, then Ramakrishna touched his forehead. And Vivekananda felt that, Vivekananda was his most famous disciple. He went all around the world. And Vivekananda felt electric shocks and fainted. So Prabhupada laughed. He said, you have read Bhagavad Gita, the universal form? Does it say anything about electric shocks? Then when Vivekananda woke up, Ramakrishna was crying. And Vivekananda said, why are you crying? And Ramakrishna said, I have given you all my power. I have none left. I remembered reading that story. And Prabhupada said, so? Is spiritual knowledge like money? If I give it to you, I don't have any left? So I was convinced. That convinced me. And then it was time for prasad. We went for prasad. And Prabhupada made a joke about it, but I can't remember the joke. I remember Prabhupada made a joke, but I can't remember it. What else? Any pastimes you can... Prabhupada never, never, never compromised. Never. Even we would sometimes get angry because, you know, when you preach to new people and sometimes they say, well, why do you know, think you know everything and that nobody else is right? Like new people say. So we also had that attitude. Of course, we were respectful in our speaking because Prabhupada's age and he had such, was such a powerful person. But we also were like that. Now, I remember, all right, I'll tell you some stories about Prabhupada's logic and his intelligence. There was a teacher in India named Meher Baba. I don't know how famous he was in India. He had a following in the United States. I guess he's not so well known. Nobody seems to light up with recognition, but he's probably more famous in America than in India. And I remember seeing a picture of him in a bookstore that said, Avatar Meher Baba. And underneath it said, I was Rama, I was Krishna, I was this one, I was that one, and now I am Meher Baba. So two young men came to see Prabhupada. I was in the other room, but there was Prabhupada's apartment, but there was a window between the two rooms. So I heard the two men, they sat down, and one of them said, we're on our way to India, we're going to see Meher Baba. He's an avatar. And Prabhupada said, if I say I'm an avatar, will you believe me? And the boy said, no. And Prabhupada said, then why do you believe Meher Baba? You have never even seen him. So I thought, such fine, fine intelligence. And another time, see, there was of course, the hippies were big sense gratifiers. And they used to take all kinds of intoxicants. Usually not alcohol. They didn't like alcohol, but any other kind of drug they would take, you know. So there was a very popular drug called LSD at the time. It was very popular among the hippies. And it was very powerful, as a drug, was very powerful. And you would think you were having spiritual visions. You know, many people thought they were great spiritualists because they were taking this drug, you know. So at the evening meeting, there was a guest. And the guest asked Prabhupada, well, what about LSD? That gives you spiritual visions. So I thought, well, how will the Swami answer this? Because it was a trap. If the Swami would say, well, I've never tried it, Then the man could say, well, then how do you know? It doesn't give you spiritual visions. And if the Swami would say, well, I tried it, but it didn't work, then the man could say, well, you say no intoxicants, but you're taking intoxicants. I mean, Prabhupada never did try it, of course. And Prabhupada, I said, how will he answer this? And Prabhupada answered, I myself have never taken these things, but my followers have all given them up. And I thought, that is as brilliant as anything I have ever read said by Jesus Christ or Lord Buddha. That is as brilliant as anything I've ever read in the Bible or any scriptures. That answer. Yeah. All right. Any questions about anything you might have read? Jog my memory. How many people have read Planting the Seed? Computer? Well, people didn't have computers then. I can tell you a computer pastime. This is a few years later in Los Angeles when we had a little business and they bought a computer. At that time, computers were not easily available, you know. This was the smallest computer in the world and it stood this high from the floor and a disk would cost $200. You know, this was before laptops and everybody's computer. So I knew about computers, so I was programming the computer. So we were on a morning walk one day, and Prabhupada said, we were on the beach, and Prabhupada said to me, can your computer tell you how many grains of sand there are on the beach? And I said, no, you would have to actually tell the computer. And at that time, Swarup Damodar Das Brahmachari, right? He said, does that mean there is a brain superior to the computer? And I said, the computer is not a brain, it is only a stupid machine. And Prabhupada was satisfied with that answer. He didn't say any more. All right. Any other questions about some pastime? Well, I tried to think of some. I'll tell you. So I have a background in electronics. So today you buy tape recorders and everything, it's all compact with a little printed circuit and impossible to fix. But in those days, we didn't have that kind of electronics. This was the 1960s, you know. And you could fix things if you knew how. So there's a couple of stories. That I used to be an engineer in recording studios before I joined. So I met big stars, you know, I could rub elbows with big stars. So, you know, I was, you know, it's a kind of a glamorous job, you know. And Prabhupada had a tape recorder. It was a small one. It was about this big, right? With a reel-to-reel cassettes, that technology was just coming in. So whenever something would break down, they would call me because I had an electronics background. So, but I knew how to fix the big tape recorders that they use in recording studios. They're multi-$1,000 recorders. And they're made to be easy to fix because when you've got 50 musicians all getting money by the hour for a recording session and something goes wrong, you've got to fix the equipment quickly. So I went to look at Prabhupada's recorder. And of course, it was, you know, I never had worked on these home things. So I looked at it and I said, well, what does this switch do? And Prabhupada said, oh, you have to ask what this switch does? I said, you cannot fix it. How can you fix it if you have to ask what this switch does? You know? And somebody walked in the room and Prabhupada said, he wants to fix my tape recorder, but he has to ask what this switch does. And Prabhupada was just smashing my pride. Another time, I was retyping a letter that Prabhupada had typed. And, you know, to fix any English or spelling mistakes or anything. And I came to the expression Sri Sri Radha Krishna. Well, I had heard of Sri, but I had never heard of Sri Sri. And not only that, but one street was at the end of a line and the next street was at the beginning of a line, and that's a common typing mistake. To repeat the last... So I thought, oh, maybe it's a mistake. So I went into the other room where Prabhupada was standing, and I said, Sri Sri Radha Krishna? Prabhupada said, yes. I said, oh, I thought it was a mistake. And Prabhupada said, when I write in your language, you can correct me, but when I write in my language, you cannot correct me. And then somebody walked into the room, and Prabhupada said, I told him he could correct me when I write in his language, and now he wants to correct me when I write in my language. So I just went back and finished typing the letter. But I'll tell you the opposite of on Prabhupada also. There are a few of us sitting in Prabhupada's office, and I was fixing something, and I cut my finger with the screwdriver. Not very bad, but it started to bleed, and I didn't want to get blood on anything. And I didn't know you shouldn't take service from the spiritual master. So I said to Prabhupada, do you have a piece of cloth? And he threw me an old typewriter ribbon. Does everybody know what a typewriter ribbon is?
Yes.
Yeah. So he threw me an old typewriter ribbon. Of course, I didn't want to wrap my finger in a typewriter ribbon. And then Prabhupada looked, and he saw my finger was bleeding. And Prabhupada said, oh, I didn't know you had cut yourself. I'm sorry. I said, well, that's all right. Well, it wasn't a big deal. He said, no, he said, I'm sorry. I said, well, that's okay. And he apologized several times for that. But I remembered later that I had once read that printer's ink is antiseptic. That ink actually kills germs. So Prabhupada actually had done the right thing. Another time I was half sitting, half kneeling, you know, with one sitting on one heel with the other foot half up. Prabhupada said, don't sit like that. You cannot be comfortable sitting like that. So I was also surprised that he was so concerned about whether I could be sitting comfortably or not. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you, so I was initiated. All right. There was some talk about an initiation. In fact, some of the people would bow when Prabhupada came into the room. And I remember talking with Hari Griva, with Howard then. And Howard said, I don't like all this bowing. And I said, me neither, you know. It was too foreign. I thought, you know, you can't bring the Orient to New York, you know. And then there was some talk of an initiation. And Raymond came up to me with a pencil and paper. And he said, hey, Wally, you want to get initiated? And I said, well, I don't know if I'm ready for that. And he said, well, none of us are, but we're going to do it anyway. I said, well, okay, me too. So he wrote my name on the list. And then after the morning class, you would ask Prabhupada, what is initiation? Prabhupada said, well, I will tell you some other time. I'll tell you later. Finally, the day before the initiation, Prabhupada said, now I will tell you what initiation is. Initiation means a spiritual master accepts a student and takes charge of him. And the student accepts a spiritual master and agrees to worship him as God. And he stood up and walked out of the room. And we looked at each other. It was as if an atomic bomb had just gone off in the room. I mean, worship him as God, you know. He wasn't liberal, you know. And anyway, Prabhupada said, you know, nobody should want to be worshipped like God, you know. So I didn't know what to do, whether I could in good consciousness accept initiation. So I went to see my friend Keith, who was in the hospital at the time. And I said, well, I don't know whether I can get initiated. The Swami says we have to worship him as God. And Keith said, well, you're already doing that by accepting everything he says. I said, hey, that's right. So I got initiated. I got initiated with long hair and a beard and old clothes. And we got in Prabhupada's apartment, and we had a fire in the apartment. You know, fire sacrifice in the apartment. But I remember first, Prabhupada, Mother Janaki had all Ray Rama had bought beads. They were big red beads, about this big. Mine were later stolen. I don't have them anymore. And then everybody, she strung all the beads, but without knots in them. And then everybody had the beads on the plate and everything. The neck beads were yellow plastic beads, all bought from a store in Manhattan. You know, we tied the neck beads on. I said, "Hey, how do you get these off?" And somebody said, "You don't." Mm-hmm. And then Prabhupada held up my beads and said, "Whose are these?" I said, "They're mine." He said, "Come forward." And he did this, and I had to bow. So that was the first time I ever bowed. Right? At my initiation, right? And then Prabhupada spoke Sanskrit, and I repeated, but I didn't know what I was saying. I just repeated what he said. I assume I offered obeisances, you know, because you have to do that. I assume that's what I did, but I didn't know. I just repeated what he said. And Prabhupada told me my name was Umapati. But I misunderstood what he said. I thought he said the husband of the goddess of fortune, but it's not. That was my misunderstanding. I don't remember what he really said, you know. So for a long time, I thought it was the name of Krishna, but actually it's a name for Lord Shiva. A few years later, I asked Prabhupada, is my name a name for Lord Shiva? And Prabhupada said, yes, that means you are the servant of the servant. Mm-hmm. And then we built a fire, you know, and we had a fire pit in the room, and the smoke was pouring out the windows. Smoke was pouring out the windows. And I thought, some neighbor is going to call the fire department. And the firemen are going to come, and they're not going to believe what they see. But no firemen came. It was not Janmashtami. That I remember very clearly, that it was not Janmashtami. That's a mistake in planting the seed. It was not Janmashtami. I remember that it was a Friday night, because I was, after I left, we all went home then and left Prabhupada to clean everything up. You know, nobody thought of cleaning up, you know. And I was walking home, and I was thinking, okay, I'm not Wally, I'm Umapati. I'm not Wally, I'm Umapati, you know. And I ran into one of my hippie friends, Louis Abulafia. And we're both Jewish. And Jews go to the temple on Friday night. So I had the ash on my forehead from the fire. So he said, "You've got something on your forehead." I said, "Oh, I'm coming from the temple." He said, "Oh, that's right, it's Friday night." I said, "No, the Krishna temple, I've just been initiated." And I went back. "I'm not Wally, I'm Umapati. I'm not Wally." And I still had my long hair and beard. And when Kirtananda got out of the hospital, I decided to celebrate. So that evening, I shaved off my beard and went to the temple. And Prabhupada said, "Oh, Wally looks very nice today." And then that afternoon, I went to the barber college, where people study to be barbers. It's a school for barbers. And you can get a very cheap haircut there. So I got a haircut. And I went back to Matsuri, and Haiguru said, "Well, you look 15 years younger." And that reminded me of another story that went through my mind and went out. I can't remember what the story was. Oh, so Prabhupada came to America, and he had the Srimad Bhagavatam, the first canto in three volumes. Maybe some of you have seen those old sets that he printed in Delhi. And there was the dust cover. And on the dust cover, there was the material and spiritual world. There's Goloka, and there's Vaikuntha, and all that. So all these bubbles, you know, they're all in circles. So there was one circle that really got the attention of me in Hayagriva. I said, "Hey, this is far out, you know." I said, "Yeah, far out, man." And "This is where I want to go." I said, "Yeah, me too, you know. This is really far out. I want to go here, you know." So I was going out somewhere, and Hayagriva was on his way to the temple. I said, "Ask the Swami what that bubble is, because I want to go there." And when I got back, Hayabiba was there. I said, did you ask the Swami what that bubble is? He said, yeah. He said, it's the material world. Wow. Any questions about anything? Something you've heard from these days? Refresh my memory. All right. When I started, what happened was some of the guys already had a service. We're doing some kind of service. And I thought that Prabhupada was going to gather maybe 25 disciples and take them to a mountain cave and give them the secret teachings. I mean, I never expected this at all. So I thought, well, I'd better get in on this. So I went to see Prabhupada, and I said, is there something I can do for you? And Prabhupada said, yes, you can take notes in class and type them up. So, and then he said, and you can also come and eat with us. So I thought, well, that was kind of a payment for the service, you know, that I was going to eat. But at that time, Kirtanananda was already cooking. He was always a good cook. So he was already cooking. There would be dal, but it was, you know, it was spiced Indian style. So it was much hotter than what we were used to. Americans don't eat so many chilies, you know. Most Americans don't eat chilies at all, you know. There was dal, there was sabji, rice, and chapati, a stack of chapatis like this. You could have all the chapatis you wanted. And then we would sit in Prabhupada's apartment, and the Prabhupada would sit at the head, and we'd all sit in a circle, and everybody would have a plate. No, everybody had nothing in front of him. And then Prabhupada would recite a prayer, and we would repeat. Maybe it was Sharira Avijajal. I don't know, you know. All I know was that the prayer seemed to go on forever, and I was so hungry waiting for the sign. And then Prabhupada would make up the plates and pass them around. And when we'd finish eating, then our mouths would all feel very hot from the chili. And on Prabhupada's plate, there would be a banana and some sweet rice, and he would mash them together with his fingers and pass them around, and you'd just take a little bit of it, and your mouth would feel cool and refreshed. So I thought, oh, there's some kind of science here. And Prabhupada was very strict about putting fingers in the mouth. And I got out of the habit, because I remember I was in Prabhupada's office and I was typing something, but it seemed like every 5 minutes my finger would just by itself go into my mouth. So every time I would get up and go to the bathroom and wash my hands and come back. You know. And after that time, I never had any problem putting it with them. But we were all having prasad, and I had a friend, Harvey, who used to come. A lot of people started coming for prasad. And my friend Harvey finished his prasad and licked his fingers clean, you know, one at a time. Yeah, licked his fingers clean. And Prabhupada said, Harvey, go wash your hands. And Harvey said, I already did. And Prabhupada said, go wash your hands. So he went and washed his hands. One day, I would do a lot of typing for Prabhupada. So one day, I was typing a list of devotee names with their kami names. And I typed something about how you should call devotees Prabhu. And I was typing their names. And Prabhupada said, when you get to the end of the list, leave some room at the bottom of the page. So I got to the end of the list, and Prabhupada said, did you leave room at the bottom of the page? I said, yes. Then he said, then type this. And he dictated, Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swamin Iti Namine. I offer my respectful obeisances onto A.C. Bhakti, Sriman A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swamin, who is very dear to Krishna on this earth, having taken shelter at Krishna's lotus feet. So that was how we got to paradise. Another time I was in Prabhupada's office with him, and it was a cloudy day. The sky was all gray and the room was gray. And suddenly the sun came out, and suddenly the room was filled with light. And Prabhupada said, when the spiritual sun comes out, it is like that. All right, let me describe a little bit Prabhupada's apartment. See, the temple was a storefront. In back of the storefront was a courtyard. And in back of the courtyard, there was a building with apartments, a small building, I think it was four stories high with two apartments on each floor. You often find that in big Western cities. In back of the store, they call it a coach house. There's another house. So you would walk in Prabhupada's apartment, and there was a little place you could stand. On your left was the kitchen. It was a small kitchen, but a nice kitchen, stove, refrigerator, sink, everything. Kitchen, and Ananda used to cook humongous feasts in that little kitchen. Right? To the right was the bathroom, you know, ordinary bathroom. And then in front of you were two rooms. And the room on your right would be Prabhupada's sitting room, where he had made a desk in front of him, and he would sit on the floor and type. And across from him on the wall was a closet. Because in homes in America, closets are built in. In many countries, you have to buy a closet. But in American apartments, the closets are built in. It's like a little room to the side of the room. So there was a closet. And there was it was piled high with suitcases and boxes, you know, filled with papers. And Prabhupada knew where every paper was. He'd say, it's in the third box from the bottom, in the middle. There's, get me this paper. And it would be right there. Yeah. The other room was where we had prasadam. It was mostly empty. There were some clotheslines hanging. And there was a little Guru Gauranga altar with a picture of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati and a Panchatattva. Remember at the initiation, everybody went and touched their beads to the feet of Lord Chaitanya. Mm-hmm. And in between the two rooms was a window, like the windows that go on the outside. You could lift it up and close it. In that part of New York, that's very common. But one day, after prasad, I was sitting talking with some of the guys, and a young man came in that I didn't know. Some of them knew him. And he was telling them all the latest hippie news. So at that time, there was one famous hippie who was a drug guru. You know, he was claiming to be a guru with that he could give you God with drugs. You know, and he had a place a little bit out of New York City called Millbrook. You know. So we were sitting talking, and then this guy said, and I just met so-and-so, and he came back from Millbrook, and he told me they had the wildest party there. And immediately, I was all ears, you know. I wanted to hear about this wild party, you know. Because it was a lot more than a party, what went on, you know. And just at that time, Prabhupada looked through the window, and he said, Umapati, you are not sitting properly, because I had my back to the altar. So I had to turn around, face the altar, with my back to the conversation, and I couldn't hear anything that was being said. So Prabhupada obviously did this on purpose to protect me. You know? Somehow my ears were blocked. I could hear a sound, but I couldn't make out anything that was said. And I never found out what happened at the party. Now Hayagriva was typing from the Srimad, maybe the Srimad Bhagavatam, or maybe he was typing from tapes, but he was typing. And I would also type because I had to type up my notes from Prabhupada's lectures. So I decided I would be in the storefront and Hyagree would be upstairs in Prabhupada's apartment. So then I thought, well, why don't I just go and sit with upstairs? It'll be quiet. I'd get more work done. But of course, Hyagree and I were old friends, so whenever we'd get together, we'd start talking. And Prabhupada would come in the room and said, you cannot talk. If you talk, Wally will have to go downstairs. We'd go back in, so we'd be quiet, and then we'd start talking again. And they have several times Prabhupada would come and say, you cannot talk. Finally, he sent me back downstairs. what else? What are some pastimes you may have heard about? Because sometimes people hear about pastimes and they're wrong. One time somebody asked me about three conversations I was supposed to have had with Prabhupada, and they were all false. I remember one time Hyagreva and I drove with some friends, a married couple and a little boy, out to the beach. And Hyagreva had gotten some kartals. And we chanted all day. And I was amazed you could just chant all day and not get tired of it. You know, we chanted, our friends were also chanting, we chanted all day. So the next day, I went up to see Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, have you been chanting? And I said, yeah, I said, it's amazing. I said, the mantra has just enough change in it so you don't get tired of it. Prabhupada said, yes, yes. He was so happy that I had discovered you don't get tired of chanting. I think some other pastime. Okay, I remember pastime. Because after a few months, I left. You know, I got a good job in a recording studio, and I left. And I wasn't going to the temple. But I was the only one who could fix Prabhupada's equipment, the electronic equipment. So the devotees would come and get me. Say, Prabhupada's record player is broken, you know. I mean, this was before CDs, you know. Record 33 RPM records, has anybody ever heard of those, you know? Where an album would be about this big, you know. I remember two incidents. I came one time to fix something. Prabhupada was in his office, and I was in the prasadam room with Kirtanananda. And Kirtanananda gave me a gulab jamun, my first gulab jamun. And he said, we call these ISKCON bullets, because if you get shot with one of these, you will never recover. And then they had a little altar with Jagannath Baladev and Subhadra. So that was the first time I saw Jagannath Baladev and Subhadra. And as we were talking, Prabhupada came into the room and he walked up to me and he said, even if you don't want to be one of us, you must associate with us. You cannot get away from us. Mm-hmm. Another time, I came to fix Prabhupada's record player, and it was something easy, I got it fixed. A few of us were sitting around. And then somebody put on a recording of classical Indian music, you know, sitar music by a famous musician. And Prabhupada smiled. So we thought, oh, he must like this, you know, Indian music, you know, he must like it. So somebody said, do you like this music, Swamiji? And Prabhupada said, this is sense gratification music. And Hyagreva said, but it's a raga. They play it in temples. Prabhupada said, it is sense gratification music, you know. And Prabhupada said, but this is a famous Indian musician, you know. Prabhupada said, yeah, but this is sense gratification music, you know. And how you're saying, but it's a raga. It's a raga. They play it in temples. It's a raga. And Hyagreva was getting all excited. His face is turning red, you know. Prabhupada said, this is sense gratification music. And then somebody said, Prabhupada said, this musician is a businessman. You know? And somebody said, well, what if he wants to become a devotee? And Prabhupada said, oh, he can come. You know? And somebody said, but Swamiji, weren't you once a businessman? And Prabhupada said, because I went naked then, I should go naked now? And in the meantime, Harry, you were saying, but it's a raga, but it's a raga. They play it in temples. So Prabhupada and I looked at each other, we were just laughing. Any questions? Nobody has any questions about Prabhupada's pastimes? What? Okay. Right. The first Rath Yatra was in San Francisco in 1967, but I wasn't there for that one. That's where the chariot was, an open truck. They call it the San Francisco Car Festival. But I wasn't there for that one. The second one, 1968, we actually built a cart. The owner named Sham Sundar. We built a cart. And I remember that Prabhupada wasn't at that Rath Yatra. And we had many people pulling the cart all the way through the park. San Francisco has a very beautiful, very large park. And we pulled the car through the park to the beach. And the deities where they spent the day on the beach. And afterwards, in the temple, everybody noticed that the deities looked like they had a suntan. Everybody noticed it. Everybody, that the deities looked suntan. All right, I'll tell you, so this is in Los Angeles, maybe 69. That I went with some devotees to Prabhupada's apartment, which wasn't near the temple. It was quite far. And we were sitting there, and Prabhupada put on a tape. He had just recorded. It's the commentary. It's the purport to Nittipada Kamalam. If you look in the songbook under Nittipada Kamalam, Prabhupada doesn't give a word to word. He gives an explanation of it. So he had just recorded that. And we were sitting. Now, I was behind Prabhupada, so he wasn't looking at me. And when Prabhupada says something about these people are simply horrible, somehow or other, it struck me funny. You know, said they are simply horrible. And it struck me funny, but I didn't laugh. But in my mind, I laughed. And Prabhupada turned around and looked at me with a big smile on his face like he was enjoying the laugh. Prabhupada would sometimes do that, like sometimes you have something on your mind, and when he's giving a lecture, he'll answer that question that you haven't even asked him. What are some others? I was in Rath Yatra with Prabhupada, but that was a few years later. That famous picture of the Rath Yatra, with Prabhupada standing on the chariot and he's surrounded by the... I was not at that Rath Yatra. I was supposed to go. I was in Los Angeles, and the Rath Yatra would be in San Francisco. They're not. It's an overnight bus ride, like about an hour and a half plane ride. They're not very far. And everybody was going to go up for the Rath Yatra, and a devotee named Muralidhar. There's a painting you'll see often reproduced in ISKCON temples, Krishna coming home and Mother Yashoda is running to greet him like this. Yeah, he painted that picture. And he was going to stay back and clean Prabhupada's apartment. Well, everybody else went up to San Francisco. But the day before we were supposed to leave, he came up to me and said, I said, you want to go to San Francisco, right? He said, yeah. Okay, I said, you go and I'll clean the apartment. So they all went, and I stayed back. I stayed in Prabhupada's apartment, and I cleaned the place, vacuumed the rugs. But I started with the altar. And I noticed on the altar that there was a picture of Prabhupada himself with the San Francisco disciples. And I thought, my goodness, Prabhupada loves his disciples so much that he even puts their picture on his altar. But I got to meet Prabhupada at the airport and ride from the airport back to the apartment with Prabhupada. We talked a little about the moon, because that's when the big thing about people walking on the moon, you know, that all was going on about that time in 1969, it was starting. You know, they're walking on the moon. And of course, Prabhupada said, no, absolutely not, you know. So we talked a little bit about that. We talked about property prices in Los Angeles, you know. All right, what else? All right. The immigration department would not renew Prabhupada's visa. This is 1966. So before the evening program started, then Ray Rama said all the devotees should stay after the program. We're going to have a meeting. So, afterwards we had the meeting. Prabhupada said that he said immigration would not renew his visa. He said, I don't know why. I have answered all of their questions. But Mr. Allen Ginsberg was a very famous poet at that time. He said he can get a lawyer. I forget how much money, but if we would all give $35, then we'd have enough money for the lawyer. So we all agreed we'll get the $35. And Prabhupada said, I am very touched that you want me to stay so much that you will do this for me. So we all got the $35. But another time, because I called a friend, a black man who had converted to Islam, and I said, I need $35. They're going to throw the Swami out. And he said, oh, we had the same problem with the imam at the mosque. And he gave me $35. You know? So actually, he did some. I never thought about that. He did devotional service in his life. You know, because he wasn't a very serious Muslim. I remember when Prabhupada went up to immigration, I came out of the Second Avenue, and Prabhupada was standing across the street waiting for a bus, and he had on his best dhoti and fresh tilak and everything. And he said, I'm going to immigration to answer some questions. And I wanted to go with him, but I was too shy to say, could I go with you? But another time, I was fixing something, and I needed 35 cents to buy something. And I had quit my job. I had no money, nothing. I needed 35 cents. So as I was coming downstairs out of the apartment, I met Prabhupada going in. And I said, I need 35 cents to buy a fuse. And Prabhupada said, the student should not ask the spiritual master for money. And I said, what? And it's only 35 cents, you know. It's nothing, you know. And I said, but I don't have any money, you know, and I'm fixing your equipment, you know. And he said, the student should not ask the spiritual master for money. And I kept arguing with him, and he kept saying the student should not ask the spiritual master for money. And then finally he gave me the 35 cents. But I was really stupid because, you know, this was the hippie era. I could have easily gone out on the street and begged 35 cents, you know. It wouldn't have been any trouble. All right. Any other questions?
Anything of New Vrindavan?
I was never with Prabhupada at New Vrindavan. But I remember in Paris, when Prabhupada came to the Paris temple and came into the temple room, Mother Kosalya, did you ever know Kosalya? She was in charge of the deities, and the deities just looked fabulous. They just looked absolutely fabulous, you know, the way they were dressed. And Prabhupada sat on the Vyasasana, and he said, I do not have to ask whether you are happy. You are serving Krishna so nicely, I know you are happy. Another time, in Montreal, at Prabhupada's Vyasa Puja, he told her, she said that he had, first of all, it was the first Rasa Puja I'd been to, except in 1966. This was probably 1968, 2 years later. So Prabhupada had us all read an offering to him. And I would say an offering. We didn't write one. So that was the first time I ever saw that, that we should say offering to the spiritual master. Now, it just reminded me of when Prabhupada had told me, Nama Om Vishnu Padaya, that I was so surprised that he could dictate a prayer offering obeisances to himself and not be embarrassed or proud. It was as if he were saying, you know, 2 pounds of potatoes, a pound of carrot. So then Prabhupada told the story of how his spiritual master had appeared to him in a dream and said, follow me. And Prabhupada knew that his guru wanted him to take sannyas. When Prabhupada woke up, he thought, how horrible. He said, how horrible. I will have to leave my children. And he had the dream several times. And he would always think, how horrible. I will have to leave my children. He said, but he finally took sannyas. He said, and now I have so many nice children. He said, so you see, you never lose by serving Krishna. And that was the year I still had my job, but I had come back to Krishna consciousness. And I was in New York, and it was Janmashtami, and I'd finished my day's work of fasting, and I wanted to get a gift for Prabhupada. I had bought some rose oil, some oil of rose, but I wanted to get something else. And it was getting late, and I had to get to the airport to take the plane to Montreal, which is also a short ride, about an hour and a half, Montreal, Canada. And I saw a store that I'd never seen before, you know, not a big store, and I went in, and I found a very beautiful little bowl, a gold bowl. And the woman told me it's actually sterling silver with gold plating on top. And that was a fashion started by President Kennedy's wife. Shows you how far back this goes, right? So I got the bowl at the last minute, went home, changed clothes, packed, ran, you know, took a taxi to the airport, and got to Montreal at 10 o'clock at night during the Janmashtami festival. And put the package of rose oil on the bowl on Prabhupada's Vyasa Sangha. Then the next day, I went to Prabhupada's place, you know, and Prabhupada held up the bowl and showed everybody, you know, and said, I'm going to use this to offer sweet rice to the deities. And somebody asked me, is the bowl pure gold? I said, no, it's gold on top of sterling silver. All right. Me. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I can't talk about that if it's being recorded. I would love to tell you stories about China, but people are recording it, so I don't dare. Any other questions?
Maharaj. I was just over here. I was just wondering, you seem to say that in the beginning you were not so firm in your Krishna consciousness, and I was wondering which experiences and events led you to embrace Krishna consciousness very seriously.
Well, it just happened over time. You know, after I came back, after being out for 9 months, at that time, I could understand that there was nothing else besides Krishna consciousness. But I cannot mention any one thing. You know, there was no lightning bolt that struck me. You know, just over time. One of the important factors is accepting everything Prabhupada says or writes, or of course, if you're a disciple of a disciple, and that disciple is strictly following Prabhupada, you know, is that you have to bring yourself to the point where even if something strikes you very strange, you accept it because Prabhupada said it because it's in the scriptures. just like the structure of the universe, as it is in the fifth canto, is so different from what the scientists are saying now. And the scientists are always saying, well, we have proved it, you know, with our computers. This is one of the things that the British did to destroy the faith of the Indian people in Srimad Bhagavatam. Because, you know, with our telescopes and our instruments, we have discovered the universe, and here your Srimad Bhagavatam is all wrong. You know? And if your scriptures cannot even describe the world that you see, how can they describe the world that you can't see? You see, this thing, you know, that the sun gives heat and light to the whole universe. And, you know, this is now, whereas the scientists are saying the sun is just some small star. When Prabhupada said all the stars are moons and there's one sun. There are places where Prabhupada specifically says that. And unless you get to the point where you say, I don't understand it, but if Prabhupada says so, that's the way it is, then you'll never feel satisfied in Krishna consciousness. Because you'll be living in the wrong universe. You'll be living in an illusory universe. Because you live in what you perceive. And when you accept this, then everything changes. Just like you hear so many things the Prabhupada said about women. If you read everything Prabhupada said about women, you can see how concerned he is for the welfare of women. You know, Prabhupada, it's not that Prabhupada says, you know, the women are supposed to be, you know, thrown in the corner and this and that, you know. You will see how concerned Prabhupada is for the welfare of women. Right? Or you see, Prabhupada said this and that about blacks. I wrote an article on it. Read everything Prabhupada said about blacks. You will not find any fault. Even the most so-called liberal person cannot argue with what Prabhupada said about blacks if you read everything he said about blacks and not just take things out of context. Now, I remember 26 Second Avenue, there was a young girl, maybe about my age, who used to come, and she was as black can be. You know, I had seen her around the neighborhood. I didn't really know her, but I'd seen her. But you talk about somebody black, she was really black. And I came in one time in the Prabhupada's room and sat down, and she was talking with Prabhupada. And she could not accept Prabhupada's conclusion. I mean, the conversation was very polite. You know, she was very polite. But she just couldn't accept it. And she was saying, well, if what you say is right, then there's no freedom. And they talked a while more. And then again, she said, well, if what you say is right, there's no freedom, I may as well kill myself. You know? And then finally she left. And when she left, Prabhupada looked at us and said, she is very intelligent. You know? So it's not that, you know, blacks are stupid, women are stupid. You know? Read everything Prabhupada says. Because I know people get caught up in this, you know. Read everything Prabhupada says. And you'll find that he does not say anything that even the most liberal person could object to. There's even a statement where Prabhupada says sometimes the wife is actually the spiritual master of the husband. And then we all hear someone talk about women are Maya, women are Maya. It's right in Srimad Bhagavatam. A woman should see her husband, home, and children as an arrangement made by the material energy for her death, just as the sweet song of the hunter is death for the deer. Mm-hmm. There is no fault in what Prabhupada says. Everything is right. And if you take that attitude, you know, not that, well, I just can't accept this. You know, I just can't. No. Prabhupada is right. You know, you will not have any more problems. I thought you would simply not have any more problems. Because we tend to think of Prabhupada as an ordinary man. You know, or we tend to think, well, a Prabhupada is a 19th century Bengali. So he is influenced by the culture of 19th century Bengal, Victorian Bengal. Now, that is a great insult to Prabhupada and to Krishna consciousness. Because 19th century Bengal is still the three modes of nature. You know, if you talk about 19th century Bengali culture, it's still the three modes of nature. So people will say, so then you say, well, Prabhupada's not a Mahabhagavata. And he will say, well, he is a Mahabhagavata, but he's influenced by Bengali culture. So if you're saying that somebody who has attained the topmost level of Krishna consciousness is still under the modes of nature, then what is the use of Krishna consciousness? You see? What is the use then? If a topmost Mahabhagavata is still under the modes of nature, influenced by mundane culture, what is the use of Krishna consciousness then? If you cannot transcend the modes of nature, then everything is false. You see? I would say that what has done the most to glue me into Krishna consciousness, but to say that I'm glued into Krishna consciousness, I'm speaking very boldly. Because even Prabhupada said, I'm always praying to Krishna that I may not fall down. So I don't mean to say that I'm so far into Krishna consciousness that I could never fall down. No, but what has at least brought me as far as I am, I don't claim to be on a level where I could never fall. I'm very careful. Is acceptance of everything. Acceptance of everything. Krishna consciousness is a package deal. You take the whole thing or you don't get any of it. Because you want to change your consciousness. You want to change the way you perceive the world. If you think that the way you perceive the world is already correct, then what do you need a teacher for? You take shelter of a guru because you must realize my perception is not correct. Something is wrong. You know, I've got money, I got a beautiful wife, I've got an apartment, I've got this, I've got that, and I'm miserable. Something is wrong. But if you think that I already see this world correctly, then you will never understand Krishna consciousness. You won't move one inch. Om Jnanati Mirantasya Jnananjana Shalakaya. I was born in darkest ignorance, and my spiritual master has opened my eyes. Just like Prabhupada said, that one must feel like a fool in front of the spiritual master. Prabhupada said, quoting Prabhupada, I always felt like a fool in front of my spiritual master. And my spiritual master, who was a highly educated man, felt like a fool in front of his spiritual master who could not read and write. Well, it wasn't difficult after all feeling like a fool in front of Prabhupada because you couldn't help it. You know, you'd pick up something, you would drop it, you'd say the wrong word, you couldn't figure out what you needed to say. A lot of times Krishna would just show you what a fool you are, you know. But that is an important thing and something a lot of people have trouble with and something I see on email and things like that in email discussions. But people just cannot accept certain things. Everything is correct. You don't suit Krishna consciousness to your needs, but you suit your needs to Krishna consciousness. Because in the material world, Prabhupada said, we all think we're God. So I think I'm the absolute. And everything else has to fit my conception of things. But now you have to realize, I'm just some little thing here, and I have to adapt myself to Krishna consciousness, not adapt Krishna consciousness to me. And if you take this attitude also in your preaching, because one of the great lessons that I learned, 26 Second Avenue, is how Prabhupada never compromised, not from the very beginning. Not from the beginning. Never would he ever compromise. Of course, Prabhupada told us that Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati said that devotees who compromise are good for nothing. Right. And just sometimes I think everybody who does a lot of preaching has had this experience of reading some verse in the Gita or the Bhagavatam, and you think, well, what does this apply to? I know, why does Krishna say this? What is the meaning of this verse, you know? And you'll be giving a lecture and somebody will ask a question and that verse is the answer to that question. Mm-hmm. There are no mistakes. Even Prabhupada said, he said, okay, you know, concerning the science thing, I can understand that he doesn't want to believe me, but how can he not believe the Vedas? You see? Prabhupada bases everything on the authority of the Vedic scriptures. So when you doubt Prabhupada, you doubt the whole thing. Everything. I can't think of the Sanskrit. Arjuna says to Krishna, everything you are saying to me today, I totally accept as true. See, that was Arjuna's qualification. He accepted everything Krishna said. He said, everything you are saying, I accept as true. So you have to be that way also with Prabhupada. That everything is absolutely true. That Prabhupada is right about everything. He wants to know, I've been in the movement for 43 years, what is my realization? That Prabhupada is right about everything. Right. This is so important. I am blind. I was born in blindness and my spiritual master opened my eyes. Nobody else did. Right. No scientist did. Yeah, because you have to eventually come to the realization that I don't know anything. And everything I've been told is wrong. And everything I learned in school is wrong. You know. That's why we get so many young people, because young people can do this more easily than older people. Right? Although older people sometimes do this. I don't know anything. That's what you have to come to. I don't know anything. I may be very proud of my education and all this, and I've got MA, PhD, and all this, but I don't know anything. I am totally stupid. I cannot see. I am totally blind. I cannot see what this world really is. I cannot see. Therefore, we say we're living in the world of illusion. The world is not false. It's Krishna's creation, but I'm seeing it falsely. I don't know anything. I have no knowledge. My spiritual master gives me knowledge that I can use, but it is not mine. It is coming from him. This is essential. Without this, you will not go very far. And then you'll wonder why you feel frustrated in Krishna consciousness. Like Prabhupada gives the example of a man with jaundice. So the cure for jaundice is to eat sugar, jaundice liver disease. And the cure is to eat sugar. But when you have jaundice, the sugar tastes bitter. When I have no experience, but people have told me it tastes really awful. Sometimes people don't even think it's sugar. They say, this is not sugar. You know? But as you recover, the sugar gradually recovers its sweet taste. And when you're healthy, sugar is completely sweet. So spiritual knowledge is like that, Krishna consciousness. In the beginning, you may find bitter things. you know. Maybe something like having to get up at 3:30 in the morning may be bitter, you know, or having to accept this knowledge that seems so strange, you know. But if you keep eating the sugar, at the end you will recover and everything will be sweet. Everything will be sweet. And even if you just say, well, okay, I can't understand it, but it's right. Because there are things also that go beyond our ability to understand in our conditioned state, in our fallen state. See, there are things that are beyond. But you say, but it's true. But it's true. Frank had an interesting case. I was lecturing to some devotees from the Far East in Mayapur. And somebody came up with the statement that all the demigods reside in the body of the cow. So they were saying, how can this be? How can you have all of the demigods in the body of every cow? You know? And one woman said, I just can't understand. And the only answer I could think of is, yes, you cannot understand it. Don't try to understand it, just accept it. I don't know how the demigods do it either. You know? They know. I don't know. You know? But you accept that as true. You accept that it's true. Don't wait for your understanding. You accept that it's true. You see? But because you have to understand that the source is correct. The source is correct. The Vedas and the pure follower of the Vedas do not make mistakes. The source is correct. Blind following means that you don't know who your source is. Prabhupada said blind following means, as somebody says, you give me $100 and in 6 months you'll be God. Prabhupada said, you don't know who this person is. You don't know what authority he's saying that on. That is blind following. It is not blind following when you know the authority. That is not blind following. Right, and I remember one time Prabhupada said, you should have to follow the scriptures blindly, he said. But it's not blind following. Whatever is there is right. And if you take that attitude, it will all become easy. And you won't have any more problems. But as soon as you think you know better than the spiritual master, then you start to have problems. Because if I know better about the spiritual than the spiritual about this, well, then he can say he knows better about something else. Any other questions? Anybody else?
Yes. Maharaji, I would first of all thank you for being here, and we are really lucky to hear from someone who has been so closely associated with Prabhupada ji. So it's really our good luck here. I just wanted to ask one question. Like, you know, if I have to be into Krishna consciousness, do I have to renounce the world? Can I continue with my worldly responsibilities and yet be in Krishna consciousness? Or you think I should give it away and then, you know, follow brahmachari? What is the right way to do it?
First verse in chapter 6 of the Bhagavad Gita, that one who works as he should, giving the result to Krishna, is better than one who lights no fire and does no work. Process of this is all explained in Bhagavad Gita, that you continue your work, but everything is for Krishna. Make your home into Krishna's home. Because it is anyway. Nothing is mine, Nirmama. Everything is Krishna. Krishna is the supreme proprietor. So recognize that and live in your home as if you are a tenant in the house of Krishna, a servant in the house of Krishna. Right? That your children are not your children. A jiva cannot have children or be the child of another jiva. It is not possible. Your children belong to Krishna, so raise them as Krishna's devotees. Use your money to spread Krishna consciousness. Have meetings in your home. Make a beautiful altar in your home, not just a 25 rupee picture on the table. Of course, I don't expect that you'll have anything as beautiful as this, but make your altar so beautiful that you don't want to look at anything else. You won't even want to look at television, right? Do that. You don't give up, but you change it into Krishna service.
Maharaj, I'm sorry to pester you with another question, but your answer to my question is very enlightening, but I was wondering whether you could tell me what kind of experiences led you to this realization?
I really couldn't say. I remember thinking about the sun and the moon and the stars and saying, well, try to see it that way. And everything looked so much more right that way. And many other things, you know, that I am living in a world where what I think is a statue is really Krishna. So look at the world that way. Just things like always be thinking about these things. Always be thinking about these things. You know, it's not that you only think about these things when you're in the temple, but always have these things on your mind. How can I see Krishna now? I'm not in a temple. You know, I'm in some horrible office. You know. Right. And everybody's out on their lunch break eating meat. Thing. How can I see Krishna now? All right. Krishna is the source of light in all luminous objects. Look. Everything is giving off light. The source of that light is the same, is the super soul who's also in my heart. You just have to be thinking about these things all the time. Another thing that I used to, but I don't do this so much anymore. Some point I would always think, well, how can I preach this to people? Yeah. And I would imagine trying to convince my mother. Because if I could convince my mother, I could convince anybody. But I never did convince her. I never did convince her. She was a nice lady, but no spiritual inclination at all. And these things should be going through your mind all the time. You know, how can I explain this? How can I explain to get from this question? The answer is always the same. The end point of your logic is worship Krishna. Right? At least this worked for me. But maybe other people don't have the same mind I have. I would, in my mind, argue out some points, say, how can I get from this false conception to this conception of worship Krishna? Because I preach to people a lot, and so they will come up with these things. I have people explain in logical steps how the end, how the, you know, the only thing that has no contradiction is worship of Krishna. And you just have to have these things on your mind all the time. But I can't think of any one experience like a lightning bolt, you know, that did the whole thing. I'm still waiting for that one.
But was it, I mean, can you pinpoint something like the association of Prabhupada, or was it just the general process taking effect, or?
It's just the normal progress of Krishna consciousness. It's just a normal progress of Krishna consciousness. Just take it on somebody's word. I have to accept everything Prabhupada says. You know, like Kunti Devi says that only people who are materially exhausted can see Krishna. Only people who are materially exhausted. So you just have to say, I'm tired of living in the material world. I want to live in the spiritual world right now. So to live in the spiritual world, I just do the best I can to match my consciousness to Prabhupada. Shastra Chakshus. Shastra Chakshus means that the scripture becomes my eyes. That these two things here are no longer my eyes, but the scripture is my eyes. Just as I don't doubt what I see with my eyes. I never doubt what I see with my eyes, you know. You can tell me what I'm seeing is not here, like the Mayavadis do. You're seeing something that's not here, or I see it. You know? So then you have to also say, the scripture is my eyes. Whatever the scripture tells me, that is correct. Just like I sometimes tell people, do you know that I am mentioned in Bhagavad Gita? Did you know that? Actually, I am mentioned in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna talks about me in Bhagavad Gita. Yeah. You didn't know that, did you? Krishna talking about me. He said, the bewildered spirit soul under the influence of material nature. That's me. That's me. I am the bewildered soul under the influence of material nature. See, sometimes we think, well, you know, the scripture doesn't really apply. And sometimes when Prabhupada would give an answer to a question, we would think, well, he's answering a little off the subject, but it's not. You have to adjust your eyes. I'm not talking about something, you know, mystical and far out and, you know, no. What the scripture says, this is what it is. Think of the three modes of nature when you look at the world. You know, always remember them. Krishna says, he who can see that in this world is nothing beyond the three modes of nature, that person really sees. Mm-hmm. One who can, you know, see how the soul is migrating from one body to another. One who can think of, who can realize these three things, that the body, which is the kshetra, kshetra-gyan, and supersoul. The body, the knower of the body, and the supersoul. These three things in the material world. All these three. Bhoktaram yagitapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram Surdadam sarvabhutanam. One who knows Krishna as the supreme enjoyer, the supreme proprietor, and the supreme friend attains peace. There are so many things in Bhagavad Gita, you can just take a verse and think about this verse all day. Because Bhagavad Gita talks so much about how to see the world that you're living in. There's a lot of that in Bhagavad Gita. One who knows that when sitting, walking, talking, seeing, this and that, it is only the senses engaged with their objects. So many things that when you want to see the world around you, because Arjuna asked Krishna, how can I see you when you are not present before me? Well, Krishna says, I am the taste of water, the light of the sun and the moon. All these things, you should always be thinking about these things. You should always be thinking about these things. Because Bhagavad Gita gives so much description of what the material world really is. Prabhupada says, how can you not see Krishna? How can you not drink water and not see the sky? He said, how can you not see Krishna? Prabhupada also gave the example, I am the taste of water, raso ham apsu. So Prabhupada said, actually, that means I am the taste of liquid. It means Krishna is the taste of all liquid. So Krishna is also the liquid taste of wine. So If the drunkard, when he drinks his wine, thinks that the liquid taste of this wine is Krishna, he will become a pious man. Krishna is reaching out to everybody. That you want to change your consciousness. We call this Krishna consciousness. So we want to at all times be conscious of Krishna. So therefore you study the scriptures and you take them to heart. You take them to heart. You absorb them. Shastra Chakshus, these are my eyes. Anybody else? Yes. You.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. In Shishtashtakam, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Na dhanam na janam na sundarim kavitam va jagadishikame mama janmani janmanishvare bhautar bhaktir ahaitukitve. And in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna always says that, please come to me. Please come to my abode. You don't have to go back to material world. So I'm in total confusion. What exactly it means? Would you please explain this, Prabhuji?
Contradiction, because Krishna says, "Don't make plans to stay in the material world, but go back to Godhead." Prabhupada also said that. Because somebody asked Prabhupada. In Los Angeles, will the spiritual master have to come back if the disciples come back? And Prabhupada said, don't make the spiritual master come back. Finish it in this life. And yet Lord Chaitanya says, you know, all I want is your causeless devotional service life after life. Because the devotee should always feel that he is not qualified to go back to Godhead. We should never think, I am now qualified to go back to Godhead. I want to, or I should want to, you know, I should want to go back to Godhead. So Lord Chaitanya is saying, even if I am not qualified, let me have your devotional service life after life. Even if I'm not qualified to go back to Godhead. Because we should never think we are qualified. And as soon as you start thinking, yeah, I got it together, I'm pretty good, I'm qualified, Krishna will smash you. You may be the only one who sees it, but you'll see it. So a devotee should never think that he is qualified. Just like Narottam Das Thakur. In the Nitai Padakamalam, Narottama Borda Duki, Nitai Morde Kordi Suki. Narottama is very unhappy. Lord Nityananda, please make me happy. Right? So he's presenting himself as a wretched man. Narottam Das was an ecstatic devotee. But he sees himself as very fallen. It's not that he's just, you know, playing the humble part. He sees himself as a miserable fallen soul. Please, Lord Nityananda, make me happy. Or every morning, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu, Narottama Das Thakura, he is so unhappy. And here is, you know, a great devotee. The Lord Chaitanya put aside a reserve of Krishna Bhakti for him in the river. Saved it for him. You know. But he sees himself as a very low, miserable soul. And it's not that he's just putting on an act. Just like when Krishna Das Kaviraj says, I'm lower than a worm in stool. How can Krishna Das Kaviraj be lower than a worm in stool if he could write Chaitanya Charitamrita? But he's not putting on an act. He sees himself as totally unqualified. Radharani. Right? Just as it's mentioned somewhere, you do some devotional service, and Radharani would say, hey, Krishna, look. Look at that devotee. He's much more sincere than I am. You have to accept him. And then Krishna has to accept. That's why we say Hare Krishna. We're playing a trick. We're trying to get the mercy of Radharani. Because if we can get the mercy of Radharani, then Krishna has no choice but to accept us. So never think, you know, and especially if you take disciples, it's so tempting to think that. But Krishna, if you really want, Krishna will constantly show you how low you are. So never think that now you're qualified to go back to the spiritual world. In 1966, one devotee said to Prabhupada, he said, well, I think I finally conquered sex desire. And Prabhupada said, when you think that, that is just when you fall. Bhaktivinoda Thakur considers himself a wicked materialist. And Prabhupada said, I am constantly praying to Krishna that I may not fall down. How could Prabhupada fall down? But a devotee has that attitude. Trinadapi suniche natarari vasa hishnuna amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. Don't even think you're better than a blade of grass. So you always have to remember this, you know, I don't know anything. And even now, when I give a class, I always mention that, I always imagine that it's being recorded and they're going to play it for Prabhupada. And what will Prabhupada say? Will he say, oh, Umapati is preaching nicely? Or will he say, what is Umapati saying? Where has he heard this? Always be on your guard. Don't ever relax. Always be on your guard. Maya's right there. And she's smarter than we are. Maya herself can create a universe. But she's a lot smarter than we are. So always be on your guard. And when you talk to people and explain, you always think of, is what I'm saying right? You know? Is what I'm saying right? Just like you asked about my experiences. But my experiences will not help you. But my knowledge, at least what I understand to some small degree, is that Prabhupada is always right. And just try to match your own thinking and seeing to the scriptures and to Prabhupada's books. And if you are following a strict follower of Prabhupada, also take him as the same authority. Authority, I don't know. I don't know anything. I don't even know what my real name is. Isn't that the first thing you teach a child, what his name is? Now, I don't even know that. I don't even know what my eternal name is. I don't even know if I'm a man or a woman. Like, I was formerly a householder. And one day my wife said to me, after we'd been married many years, she said to me, you know, we've never seen each other. I'd been living with my wife for many years, but I've never seen her, and she'd never seen me. So what can I know? Einstein said, when you consider a scientific observation, you must consider the position of the observer. But I don't know where I am, what I'm doing, what is my position. So therefore, I take everything from Prabhupada. Any other questions? Objections? Yeah? Yeah, when we're too much attached to material things, I can hear you anyway if nobody else can. Use your material things in the service of Krishna. Use your material things in the service of Krishna. And if you have to work, then take a percentage of your money. Actually, it's recommended 50% is recommended. And use it in the service of Krishna. Change it. Just like if you have a job, but you're using the money from your job for Krishna, your job is also devotional service. That's explained. For one who is unattached to the fruits of his work merges entirely into transcendence. So get in the habit of using everything for Krishna. Another thing is to have so much engagement that you can't finish it in one day. That you have so much engagement and you've got to get your rounds done and you've got to get time to read and you've got to get all this done and all that, that you don't have time to think of anything else. But you don't have time. Anybody else? Anybody else? Oh, is our time up? Huh? 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Okay, what's next? Kirtan, Hari Roll. Chant Hare Krishna and be happy.